Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, folks. I'm Roland Martin. Just ahead on News One Now, candidates are looking ahead to Super Tuesday after the results from the Nevada caucuses. Trump wins there. What now is next for the Republican losers? Ben Carson, he says Obama really isn't black enough. Really? Really, Ben? We'll break that thing down. Also, the Supreme Court, they continue to say they are not going to even meet with anybody the president nominates. Mr. President, you have got to appoint a black woman. There will be nothing better to see a black woman sitting there visiting senators and they close the door in her face. Trust me, that's election gold. Also, folks, we'll sit down and chat with Elle DeBarge, the great R&B crooner. All of that next on News One Now. Let's bring the funk. Let's go. Folks, Nevada caucus ended a few hours ago, and Donald Trump wins another state. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, both U.S. senators, they ballot out for second and third place. My goodness.
We won the evangelicals. We won with young. We won with old. We won with highly educated. We won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated. 46% with the Hispanics, 46%, number one with Hispanics.
We are even going to campaign to people that are fans of Ohio State, everyone. Is that too far? Is that too much?
The only campaign that has beaten Donald Trump and the only campaign that can beat Donald Trump is this campaign.
Okay, y'all lost. Okay, I'm just saying. All right, it's the third straight dominating contest Trump has won convincingly. He touted entrance polling showing him winning the caucuses among a variety of groups. You actually saw there in that soundbite there. I want to go right to our panel, Lauren Coates, former federal prosecutor, David Swerlick, assistant editor at the Washington Post, and also Stephanie James Brown. She's hanging out with us. Stephanie Brown James, I'm sorry, CEO of Vestigious Strategies. All right, folks, let's get right into it. You break down the numbers here. It is abundantly clear that the other Republican candidates are delusional. They continue to attack one another. They say nothing about Donald Trump. They basically are giving him an easy runway to victory.
They are. They're doing what Jeb Bush did, which is underestimate Donald Trump. We never thought he'd get this far, but it's evident that he is going to be the GOP nominee, and everyone needs to wise up and lobby hard for a Democrat.
Well, no, the dumbest thing in the world is I've never seen a campaign where you attack the person coming in second, third, and fourth, and you ignore the frontrunner, David. I mean, it's the dumbest thing I've seen in the world.
Yeah, all the campaigns, as Laura said, waited too long to attack Trump, waited too long to give him credit for the fact that he was leading in all the national
polls. Not waited. Right. They still don't attack him.
They still haven't. Look, if you look at the exit polls from South Carolina and Nevada, what you see is people that want a conservative voted for Cruz. People that want someone that can beat Hillary Clinton voted for Rubio. But people who wanted someone who, quote, tell it like it is, voted for Trump. And right now, tell it like it is leading by a wide margin.
I mean, tell it like it is going to lead Donald Trump to be the nominee for the GOP. And that is a scary scenario for them. I mean, I don't think he's going to win, of course. But we are now seeing a complete dismantling of the traditional GOP. And I think it's going to be hard for them to recover to get back to their conservative core values.
I wouldn't rule it out that he could win the general election. I'm not going to give it to him and predict that now, but I would not rule that out.
Well, to me, the big mistake that Rubio and Cruz have made is not just not attack Trump. They have not capitalized on what Trump is about, which is he appeals to the angered electorate. They have not lured in the angry electorate. They have simply talked about policy and looking forward. What they have to do is capitalize on what he already knows to be his bread and butter, the angry, disenfranchised electorate. And
stop. The angry, disenfranchised white electorate. Look, here's
Hispanic vote.
First of all, Hispanics accounted for maybe 10% of the folks who are voting in this election. Also, you can be white Hispanic, okay? But here's my whole point here. What you have is a hearkening for the good old days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you hear, take our country back, which was what we heard first.
Yeah.
Then you hear Make America Great Again. There's this delusion among these Republican voters that somehow this is a guy who can restore America to prominence. What you have is you have all of these Republicans who are now saying, oh, my goodness, you look at Obama. He didn't bring the country together. Well, first of all, you can't bring the country together when on day one, on the night of his inauguration, Republicans met and saying we're going to block everything that he does. What they want is they want anything that goes their way. They're ticked off and angry with the economy. But I'm sorry, who have you been voting for the last 20, 30 years?
Roland, well, I agree with everything you said. I would just add, though, that when you talk about that Make America Great Again thing, it is as if people are saying America is not great or that we have lost prominence.
They've
America
been saying
is still
it.
Yeah. The no. only global superpower. We came out of the recession better than Europe.
But here's the problem
people
here.
Have this feeling like we're not great.
And that's because they've attacked President Obama and his policies for 8 years. They have called the country weak. They've called him weak and impotent. They tout Putin as if somehow that's a great person to tout. And they've done all of that. And so now all of a sudden, guess what? Chickens have come home to roost.
I mean,
when you have created that narrative, of course, the voters are going to go right along with it.
These are the Tea Party people who Ted Cruz thought that he was the leader of the playground and he brought all these Tea Party voters on. And now Donald Trump has taken over and said, oh, no, this is my playground. They don't want to play with you anymore, Ted Cruz. And I think that, you know, we're going to continue to see, unfortunately, Donald Trump is going to completely smash the rest of these candidates. And unfortunately, they're going to continue to fight amongst each other while this man continues to rise.
In fact, after the loss last night, you had Rubio Cruz and Kasich basically sending out tweets blasting each other. Y'all lost.
Yeah.
You were supposed to go after the front runner. It's laughable, frankly, when you continue to see what is happening here. And folks are saying, well, it's a populist deal. We're underestimating who Trump's voters are. No, we're not. I mean, I'm real clear why folks are voting for him, because they somehow think that this guy, he's projecting strength. You cannot have a president who literally pushes racial buttons, mm-hmm. who is sexist, who blasts and trashes anybody, says whatever, all the craziness he says, and you're trying to tell me that's what you want?
Well,
in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that would be, America would be a laughingstock sending Donald Trump anywhere around the world meeting with foreign leaders.
And I agree. And the reason I say you don't underestimate his voters, but you overestimate their sophistication.
Of course.
You're talking about very nuanced issues that they do not appreciate, because the role of the president, as you note, is international diplomacy. And somebody who has these very polarizing viewpoints and, mind you, no actual policy plans, right. It's form over substance. And that is what his bravado has carried him this far. That's why he's a billionaire in the United States and why he has the arrogance to believe he is qualified to be president. But there is a strong base of support for him because he is such the poster child of what they think is the polar opposite of Washington, and he's not.
I don't disagree with you, Laura, but that's the thing. I think these voters now are starting to be clear whether it's good down the road for them that they are voting for form over substance. What they want more than anything else, if you look at the exit polls, if you look at what people say, is this idea of this guy talks tough, doesn't sugarcoat his words, won't back down from anybody, not afraid to insult anybody. The voters are responding to that. The form over substance is winning.
Well, first of all, we heard him also speak about going Guantanamo Bay, talk about hilarious when he said, oh, we're spending $40 million a year. Oh, I'm going to get down to $3 or $4 million.
How?
And these fools actually believe that. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, President Barack Obama sent his final plan to close the detention center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to Congress.
For many years, it's been clear that the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay does not advance our national security. It undermines it. Today, the department is submitting to Congress our plan for finally closing the facility at Guantanamo once and for all.
And of course, Republican senators were quick to let him know that they don't plan to approve it.
So we'll review President Obama's plan, but since it includes bringing dangerous terrorists to facilities in U.S. communities, he should know that the bipartisan will of Congress has already been expressed against that proposal.
Let me say this, Mr. President. Don't shut down Gitmo, expand it, and let's have some new terrorists there.
The president is planning to close Guantanamo, maybe even giving it back to the Cuban government. This makes no sense to me. Number one, we're not giving back an important naval base to an anti-American communist dictatorship. Not only are we not going to close Guantanamo, when I'm president, if we capture a terrorist alive, they're not getting a court hearing in Manhattan. They're not going to be sent to Nevada. They're going to Guantanamo. And we're going to find out everything they know.
So let's see. There are 91 inmates in Guantanamo Bay, costing us more than $400 million a year. It's costing us about $2.7 million per inmate. Huh. Okay, I got you. Now, you had more than 500 folks who were released from there during the Bush administration, only 151 during the Obama administration. And so let's go right to Congressman Gregory Meeks, who joins us right now via FaceTime. Congressman, I got to ask you, it's laughable to me that we right now have terrorists who are in American prisons, who are in Supermax in Colorado. We've actually had trials here. Nothing has happened. Why would we be spending $400+ million a year to house less than 100 inmates?
It doesn't make sense to me either, Roland. I think that's why the president's proposal is actually a proposal that should be passed by Congress. You know, when you look at the fact that since he's been president, he has refused and there's been no additional individuals that have been sent to Guantanamo. These 10 have been, as you said, detained and or convicted in military courts. Others we've sent to other places, so the numbers are dwindling. There's been no additional attacks on us or anything of that nature. It just does not make sense to continue what we're doing at Guantanamo Bay. It's not logical. It does not make us safer. The president has been doing a good job of this, other than the fact that people are just allowing fear to overrule rationality.
Well, and what also jumps out is that, again, I go back to the fact that we currently hold some of the most dangerous criminals in American prisons. How is it that somehow American prisons, we just can't have these folks are just in a whole different category when we currently have folks convicted of terrorism in our prisons?
Well, I agree with you. I think that it is not rational. I think that if we can't do it, then no one can do it. And we need to make sure that we don't just talk the talk, that we walk the walk. How would we think about others holding other prisoners in a similar situation? So it just does not make rational sense. I think the president has been right because he's been saying that he wanted to close Guantanamo Bay from day one. It's been Congress who's been obstructionist or blocking that effort. And it cost the taxpayers tremendously great amounts of money, as you indicated at the top of your comments. I think that the president is right to continue to persist on closing it and needs to do and will continue to do everything that is in his power to get it done before he's out of the presidency.
All right, Congressman Gregory Meeks, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Real quick to our panel here. Again, I mean, the logic behind this, I mean, opposing it, we look at the amount of money that we're spending. The president says that we can certainly save on operational costs anywhere from $60 to $80 million a year. I don't understand how you actually are currently housing inmates who are dangerous. And then you say, oh, no, but we can't house them.
Yeah. And the thing about it is a lot of the detainees who are in Guantanamo are not maximum security risk. A lot of low-level offenders who haven't received trial in over 14 years of being there are being housed there. And what does it say about our prison system if we don't feel as though these prisoners can be housed safely in our securities? I mean, I just think that it's a horrible situation.
Well, I agree with you. And also, it is a sorry message to send to the rest of the world that we do not believe in extending our own constitutional protections out to anyone else who's not a citizen. You have Marco Rubio talking about, well, we're not going to give him a trial. We're not going to give him any of their rights. That is a hard message. And the reason it needs to be closed is because President Obama is right. It is a tool being used to recruit for terrorism. And Guantanamo Bay stands alone in one of the few places the United States can say is a blight on our constitutional standards. And it's just an unfortunate irritation.
I agree with everything that everybody has said. I just happen to think that this is a waste of political capital for the administration at this point. I think the issue is the legal status of the prisoners and whether they've been given the appropriate due process,
sure,
not where they're being housed. They're at Guantanamo. President Obama has made it clear all along that he wanted to close Guantanamo. He wasn't able to do it in his last year. I don't think this is
a This is part of his legacy, though. He wants this to be his period mark on his legacy, and I think he's going to continue to push for
it. And, of course, they're not going to move on it. All right, folks, we come back. A young mother is being hailed as a hero after the deadly shooting spree in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Also, Ben Carson says President Obama, not black enough. We're going to talk about that panel. Also, Republicans saying, you know what, we're not even going to meet with any nominee the president puts out there. Also on the show, Elle DeBarge breaks down how he keeps himself substance abuse free. All of that next on News One Now TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A young mother is being called a hero for helping save several children during the shooting rampage in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tiana Carruthers, the first victim in Saturday's shooting, used her own body to shield a group of children playing outside. A 25-year-old and several children, including at least one of her own, were playing outside at the Meadows townhomes when the suspect, Jason Dalton, drove up. He asked one of the kids a question. That's when Carruthers approached him, asking if there was anything she could do for him. That's when Dalton started shooting. The children ran inside the townhouse and looked on in horror. Megan Coleman witnessed the incident.
The little girl ran to the window, obviously looking for her mom. And she, my mom is dead, my mom is dead. He backed up and attempted again as they were running into the house and then missed.
Carruthers was shot three times in the legs and arms. A bullet is lodged in her kidney, but she's expected to survive. Investigators say Dalton went on to kill six other people and wound at least one other person. He remains in jail without bond. Folks, good news for people in Flint, Michigan, dealing with the lead-contaminated water crisis. The Michigan Senate approved $30 million to help cover residents' water bills. Many people received bills even though lead-contaminated water flowed from their pipes for almost a year. The funding would help give people credits to cover their water bills from April 2014 through April 2016 or until the water is clean. The state has now funneled more than $70 million into Flint to help with the crisis. Healthcare giant Johnson & Johnson must pay $72 million to the family of an Alabama woman who claimed her longtime use of their products gave her ovarian cancer. 62-year-old Jacqueline Fox died in October after losing her two-year battle with ovarian cancer. Fox's suit claimed her use of talc-based products such as Johnson's baby powder and shower-to-shower body power for over 35 years contributed to her cancer. Fox's son, Marvin Salter, took over as the plaintiff after his mother's death. Attorneys argue the company has known about the correlation between talc and ovarian cancer since the 1970s and tried to hide it from the government. On top of that, attorneys found a memo saying word of the health risk caused sales to drop. In that same memo, the company agreed to grow the franchise by targeting blacks and Hispanics. Those two groups had the highest use of talcum powder. All right, folks, the terms of the payout, the company must pay $10 million in actual damages. The remaining $62 million is for punitive damages, with $31 million of that going to the Missouri Crime Victim Compensation Fund. The case is the first among more than 1,000 NASA to result in a monetary award. An attempt to diversify the voters who select the Academy Award nominees and winners is hitting a roadblock. Last month, Cheryl Boone Isaacs, the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, announced changes to its membership. The move came after social media backlash over the all-white nominees for this year's awards. One of the changes includes 10-year limits on voting abilities of new members. But many say Isaacs bypassed the Academy's own rules by trying to implement the plan. It still requires a two-thirds majority vote to be passed. Also, the idea of adding three seats to the governing board must be awarded through election. Critics say a change like that will require the bylaws to be rewritten. A spokesman for the Academy says the proposals will be revisited after the Oscars, which take place on Sunday. All right, folks, next on News One Now, Ben Carson blasts President Obama saying he's really not black enough. Also, what in the hell is going on with the Supreme Court? Why are they now saying, forget about it, we won't even meet with anybody the president nominates? Plus, my one-on-one with, of course, the great singer, Elle DeBarge. All of that next on News One Now TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, so Republicans yesterday took a vote and they said, you know what, Mr. President, if you even nominate somebody, we ain't even gonna meet with them. We don't care what you do. Senate Republican, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says there will not be any confirmation hearings, a vote, or even a meeting with the nominee. Yesterday, what took place was they actually voted and they signed a letter. The Senate Judiciary Committee signed a letter where they said that no matter what happens, they won't even meet with the president's nominee. Shelley, pull up, please, my iPad, folks. This right here is the actual letter. It was posted on Twitter where all the Republicans on the committee signed the letter saying they won't even meet with the nominee. It's unbelievable that they're taking this tack. I want to go back to our panel here. Stephanie, we have David, we have Laura. This I don't get. Not only are they saying, Mr. President, we're not going to confirm anybody, or we're not going to vote, then we're not even going to have the meeting, even have the confirmation hearings. Now, we won't even meet with them. This is why I keep saying the president needs to appoint a black woman. First of all, who's going to have all the credentials to be on the Supreme Court? And this is what I would do. And I'm telling you, White House, trust me, this is foolproof. I don't know if any of y'all were West Wing fans. That was this scene in the West Wing where President Bartlet, the Republicans wouldn't meet with him. So what he did is he went to Congress and they were in a meeting and he sat on a bench outside their office. And here's the president sitting by himself, waiting for them to come out of the meeting, and all the cameras were around. And then, of course, he got sick of it and went back to the White House and he broke the impasse. You cannot tell me the imagery would not be amazing if you had this black woman sitting on the bench by herself, door closed, and they're waiting to meet with her. I'm sorry, this goes back to George Wallace standing in the doorway of a school saying, you can't come in.
Roland, you're right. They probably should listen to your advice, but it would have to be, in my view, someone like Attorney General Loretta Lynch, who's already in a cabinet-level post, who already will be out of that post when Obama's term ends, and who essentially has nothing to lose if they don't vote on her. If you're an appellate court judge right now, you may not want to be a black woman on the appellate court. You may not want to be nominated because that might be the end of your prospects for the Supreme Court.
And this is the perfect opportunity for all the black women organizations across the country to come to D.C. like they did when the confirmation for Loretta Lynch was happening, to say, we believe that a black woman, because there's a multitude of qualified black women who could be a Supreme Court justice. This is the time for them to come to D.C. in your fur coat if you have to. But they need to be on Capitol Hill saying that we need to have a black woman.
I'm trying to understand why these black women organizations have been silent thus far.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the reasons, and we talked about this before on the show, that people have been reluctant to come forward and be supportive, I think it's because one of his only options is going to be a recess appointment to get somebody in. Congress is, the most surprising Senate name on there is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who is saying, whose job it is to say and be able to vote and hold a hearing and be able to explore his candidates, has said, I'm not going to do my job. That should be the most surprising thing. What Obama needs to do.
No, that's surprising.
It's surprising if you are a part of this electorate and want your congressmen to actually do their jobs. And what's surprising to people, what should happen is a recess appointment, because it's a year. It only lasts for 1 year to be able to have that position.
There's precedent, because we had a previous Supreme Court justice who was a recess appointment who was later confirmed.
Right, but the more powerful imagery, Roland, than the black woman sitting on the bench, the qualified black woman sitting on the bench, is the qualified, seated Supreme Court justice who was removed by a Senate after a election goes down because she was not their choice. That's a powerful image. That's what actually would have to happen if she were removed.
Well, first of all, he's likely not going to be able to get a recess appointment because they are able to keep the Senate in business.
In fact,
the Supreme Court has already even ruled limiting the scope of recess appointments. And so all they have to do is, if they simply keep the Senate in operation, he can't make a recess appointment. But either way, what I'm saying is there's no other appointment he can make. Nobody that will give the public, first of all, a historic appointment that will give you that image when you look at the history of America, a largely white man in the Senate denying a highly qualified black woman even a meeting. Mm-hmm. When you talk about what that impact would be, now the pressure that would be on them every single day in terms of media, the pressure that will be on them when it comes to people coming to Capitol Hill, when it comes to them going back to their district. Now you're talking about the impact that we have on the fall election. But here's the greater one, David, I want you to speak to. If you do it and they don't confirm her, you now can go to Hillary Clinton and say, if you win, reappoint her.
You're right that the president should think about appointing a black
woman. No, hold on. Stop. No, David, I'm correct.
All right, not think about
I didn't say think about. Okay. I said do.
I agree with you. But the pressure that you're talking about, which the Democrats, which President Obama and the Democratic presidential candidates can apply just with the image you're describing of an African-American woman, let's say it's Attorney General Lynch, sitting on a
or
bench.
Or Judge Leah Sears, or Judge McDonald, or Judge Gilmore. Right. I mean, there are a number of people.
This will look bad for Republicans in a presidential election year. On the other hand, though, all of those Republican senators have an equal and opposite pressure coming from their Republican constituents who believe in total and complete opposition to President Obama. They don't want to find themselves
in... But you're skipping the most important thing. There are six U.S. senators, Stephanie, who are vulnerable. Toomey in Pennsylvania, 29% approval rating. Yes, they do, because here's the problem. If you're Toomey in Pennsylvania, you stay, the Republicans actually could lose control of the Senate with losing those six seats.
Jump in? I think those six senators whose seats are up care. I'm not sure the Republican Senate
guess what?
Cares because they don't want to be primaried and lose their seats.
But guess what? Senator Kirk has already come out of Illinois saying the president deserves to have his nominee looked at as a reason why. Soft, Toomey, Ohio. They're literally, if the Republicans lose, the Senate could flip in November back to the Democrats.
And this is why the Democratic Party needs to take advantage of the situation and really push in these key six states where there are very vulnerable senators to say, look, we need to galvanize our base to go and make sure that they are pushing hard against these candidates to say this is who we believe should be the nominee. And again, if the people don't speak up and have their voices heard in this situation in an election year, it's going to be a complete disservice to our country because we can't be without a Supreme Court justice for over a year.
Particularly in a year when you have abortion on the line right now in Texas, particularly in a year when you have voting rights, one person, one vote, you've got immigration issues, you've got a very important
serious
year.
Issues,
but, I'm all for imagery, Roland, but I have to say I agree with you, David, and talk about the idea of the more powerful imagery is if we can make more than these six Republican senators vulnerable. The true voice comes from what happens at the polls. You cannot tell me that
But that is at the polls. First of all, that is at the polls. My point is you have to create the environment that will fire up a base. This goes beyond imagery. This is a matter of saying if these largely white males don't even meet with a black woman, you would now have African Americans who will be far more fired up. You now have women who will be fired up. You now have progressive groups. You now will have a daily protest, if you will. Right now, nothing really happening. Right. But you will create a situation where you're going to have waves of people coming to Capitol Hill. And you know what that means? Media attention, questions every single day. Now Trump has to answer it. Rubio does. Cruz does. And here's the other piece. Black women voted at a higher rate than anybody else in 08 and 12. This sole appointment can become a galvanizing force for the constituency. And I go back to the other issue. What it also speaks to, if you now can look to Hillary Clinton and say, if you win, we want your word, you're going to renominate her.
And let's be honest.
Now you're putting pressure on Republicans and the Democratic nominee.
And if we're honest about it, we need to have a lightning rod situation like this injected into this election season because a lot of voters are not feeling too excited about the candidates either on the Republican side or Democratic side. There's a lot of support, of course, for the Democrats, for Bernie and for Hillary, but there needs to be a galvanizing issue like this to get the base fired up, especially for the Democrats to be active and vocal in their states.
It's going to actually do it. Now, also, folks, yesterday, during Politico's off-message podcast, presidential candidate Ben Carson had some interesting words about President Barack Obama. Hit play.
Like most Americans, I was proud that we broke the color barrier when he was elected. But I also recognize that his experience and my experience are night and day. He didn't grow up like I grew up by any stretch of
the
imagination.
That's right.
Not even close.
He was an African American as opposed to an African American.
African American. He was, raised white. Many of his formative years were spent in Indonesia. So for him to, claim that, he identifies with the experience of Black Americans, I think is a bit of a stretch.
All right, so here's what I would probably say. Well, Ben Carson, it's a lot of Black folks who probably say, you live in white right now.
I'm opposed.
No, I mean, if you want to have that conversation, we can go there.
Well, I'm disgusted with Ben Carson being the arbiter and decision maker of who gets to be called Black in America. Frankly, his views on what is defining as the Black experience is a narrative that actually hurts and discriminates against Black people. In order to be Black according to his standards, you have to grow up poor in Detroit. So I ask you, Mr. Dr. Ben Carson, neurosurgeon, why are you now qualified to be considered Black, and somebody whose job it is to be the head of international diplomacy, why is his Indonesian experience disqualifying him? It's offensive to me. And I, maybe because I'm a Black woman raised in Minnesota and think that it's a really irritating thing that you have to defend your Blackness as the President of the United States, you should be coming to bat for him on one issue alone. And that is, do not try to define the President or any other Black man in this country by how people define his rearing or his professional experience. Excuse you.
Let me tell you, boo, bye. I mean, that's the only thing I could just think about when I heard him talk. This is a person who came in sixth in South Carolina.
Everywhere.
He is scrambling now to play the race card that he has been so opposed to. He didn't want to claim his Blackness no other time, but now when it comes to him being far down in the polls, he wants to attack President Obama. Right. Yeah. Why are we even listening to this man?
Let me just say two things, Roland. One, as someone who comes from a multiracial and a multi-faith household like the president, I will say this to Dr. Carson. Look, my father, who's Jewish, raised three Black kids. My father, who's Jewish, has been married going on 50 years to a Black woman. He is the head of a Black household, like my mother is a head of a Black household. As far as I'm concerned, the part of Dr. Carson's comments where he says that the president was, quote unquote, raised white is pathetic, first of all. In terms of the politics, look, you're talking about President Obama, the first Black president of the United States. Dr. Carson doesn't like the Affordable Care Act, say that. You don't like his foreign policy, say that. But when you're talking about, as you said, Laura, questioning his Blackness, look, there are questioning anything about him as a person. Look, there are five living presidents. Of the five living presidents right now, including President Obama, only one won the popular vote twice. Only one won an electoral college landslide both times. Only one got both 90%, 95% of the Black vote and something like 40% of the white vote. So for Dr. Carson to treat this as this thing where he's the arbiter, as you say, of Blackness or whiteness or anything else, at this point just shows how far his candidacy is.
All right, then. All right, folks, I appreciate it. Thanks so very much. Coming up next, R&B singer Ael DeBar talks about his road to redemption and the battle to overcome drug abuse. Also, it's Wild Not Wednesday. And I'm sure our comedian's got something to say about Ben Carson. We'll ask him about that as well. Talk a little politics. It is 22 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, I recently talked to Ael DeBar. He dropped by our studios to talk about his new music. But also, while he was here, we had some Morgan State University students who were also here for a little fun. Do y'all remember this Quiet Storm jam? Come on, Morgan State. Y'all can do better than that. All right. What about this jam right here? How about this song? Y'all know that's the jam right there. Go ahead and sing that song. Hey, Tim, our whitest correspondent, you can get in this too. Come on, Tim, get in here, dance with her. Y'all can sing it.
Thinking about you for quite a while.
Do y'all know the song? Get the hell out of myself. Go. Get out. All y'all get out of here. Get out of here, all you Morgan State folks. All right. My next guest. That's his voice. You've heard his music for more than 30 years. Folks, give it up for L. DeBarge right here on News 1 Now TV 1. Y'all supposed to clap. Okay, Morgan State, y'all got to leave. Y'all got to leave. Right? Y'all got some Morgan State journalists who came by the show today, and L. DeBarge happened to be here. So I'm going to have to work with y'all. ER Ship, get them together. Get them together. All right, folks. Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How you doing?
I'm all good, man. Here, see, we just do everything different here. We just change it up, mix it up. It don't matter.
I do the same thing on stage.
Black Show, Black Network. That's how we do it.
That's how we do it.
Absolutely, man. Well, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, man. I'm working on a new project. I got some collabs with some very interesting people. You'll be hearing about them real soon. One of them's with Babyface. It's called Walking on Air. That's available now on iTunes, but I got some more collabs with some other interesting people.
Now, here's what's interesting, and I get this all the time when I'm talking to artists. You want to do new stuff, and you always want to be able to flex your muscles, but it does not matter when the artist's like, okay, fine. Sing the stuff we know.
Yeah.
And some artists don't like that. Some artists, they don't want to perform their old stuff.
They don't.
Or classic stuff.
I wonder why. Maybe because, I don't know, you know, fans can be wonderful, or they can be real super critical, too. Sometimes, you know, listening, I know if I listen to a song over and over again, you're my favorite artist. When I go to the concert, I want you to sound just like the record. If you don't, I'm going to be like, okay, all right, you lost it. So maybe that's what it is. They're scared of that.
But do you appreciate the fact that after being in the business all of these years, fan base, they still want to hear those classics?
I really do appreciate it. It shows that people really are into your music. They're not just, it's not just a hype thing. When they want to hear it like 30 years later, you've had some substance in their life.
But that also means, though, that song stands the test of time. When we have family get-togethers 20 years from now, I'll be 67, I'm 47 now. Let's say I'm 67. You're going to have your grandmother there, your mother, your father, aunts and uncles, nieces. Yeah. And there's some music that you can play with everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Versus having 90% of people leave the room because of the lyrics.
Oh, yeah, that part. That part right there. Well, how are my lyrics? You think you bring the dog and the kids and everything?
No. Everybody can stick around. Everybody can stick around. Absolutely.
That's cool.
Absolutely. So first of all, and one of the things is also still interesting, you talk about performing classic music and also traveling around the country. What still brings you joy being on stage?
This is the main thing. It's funny, but when people tell me, "L, you see this kid right here?" And you see this one too. You're responsible for that.
Yeah, these are your kids.
Right. We made this one off Time and Reveal. We made that one off All This Love. That's a classic, right?
That's like, okay, that's TMI. I'm good. Who is someone you would still love to do something with, do a duet with? Your dream duet.
One of my dream duets was Whitney, rest in peace. Never got a chance to do that with her. Stevie Wonder.
Really?
Yes. I would love to do something with Stevie Wonder. He would out-sing me, but but just to stand next to him. And he did the harmonica solo for me on Love Me in a Special Way.
Mm-hmm.
But I've yet to get in the microphone next to him on the same song. I would love to do that.
So there was somebody who you would love to have a singing battle with. Or is there an artist that you've heard their music and they've challenged you to raise your game to the next level?
Yeah, I don't think I'm crazy for this, but I'd love to have a singing battle with Rihanna.
Rihanna?
Yeah, I would.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Sounds strange. The reason why is because I just think she's so uniquely talented. I love the quality in her voice, but I think that it would be very interesting for us to match one another on a song. I think it would be very, very interesting.
We had an unsung episode on the DeBarge family. Mm-hmm. And again, when you think back, we're playing it right now. When you think back to all the things that you have gone through, what really stands out, and how do you What is your daily routine to ensure that you don't go back down that path?
Well, you have to stay humble in your mind. Mm-hmm. Don't get cocky. Because that's what happened to me in the first place. Why I went down the road of drugs is because I got cocky. I said, you know what? I'm hearing everybody talk about they're hooked on crack, hooked on this, heroin, or whatever. I said, I'm just going to try it one time. I bet you I can put it down and stop. You know, I got cocky, and it took me 22 years to put it down. Mm. And so I keep that in mind. I stay in touch with that, you know, to except for the grace of God. There go I. But God saw fit to deliver me so that I can be an example of his mercy.
Had Charlie Wilson here on the show, and one of the things that he said is that he said, look, he shuts down all kind of potential obstacles in his way. He said across the board, he doesn't want his dancers, his musicians, he said, because he said, when you've gone down that path, any temptation can affect you.
Yeah, he's right about that, too. He has shut down everything. I do dates with Charlie sometimes. I mean, nobody, if somebody's smoking a cigarette, I feel bad for him.
Really?
He might get fired with Charlie. But he runs a tight camp like that. He's very concerned about his sobriety, and he does what it takes for him. I don't care nothing about that crack and none of that stuff. I don't even have a problem with it anymore. I didn't have a problem in the first place, except I got cocky wanting to try something I had no business trying. But I'm free from it. I don't have any temptations. I don't want to be around it. I don't care about it. It's just, I'm cool, man. I really am.
You're going to be doing something for the folks in Flint, Michigan coming up
real
soon. Let's talk about that.
My management is in touch with the Coalition of Pastors in Flint, Michigan right now. We're trying to put something together just to keep the spotlight on the water crisis that's going on in Flint, Michigan. You know, maybe a benefit concert or something, a charity concert, you know, whatever we can do. So they're talking about it right now. So hopefully we'll be doing something real soon for them.
Well, and that is, you know, again, a lot of folks are just so negatively impacted by that. And I've talked to many groups who are going down there, and a lot of the folks there, they're fighting this thing, but also, you know, they're losing hope that people are forgetting what they're going through.
Yes, I don't want them to lose hope. That's why I'm ready to get involved, and I'll do whatever it takes within my power to keep the spotlight on it and keep the hope alive, because when we come together as a people, man, we can make things happen. We really can.
You've had to deal with difficulty in your life. You've had to deal with drugs in your life. And your fans, even when you have gone through trials and tribulations, they never left.
Never left. That's amazing to me. What comes from the heart reaches the heart, you know, and I see that now. It makes me cry sometimes. Sometimes when I'm on stage, I mention it. I say that I've been through this, been through that, but I see you still have love for me. And that means so much to me. It really does.
News One Now with Brother Roland Martin, TV One. I'm Bill Duke.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
On this day in history, in 1864, Rebecca Lee becomes the first African-American woman to earn a medical degree. In 1922, the Frederick Douglass home is turned into a national shrine here in Washington, D.C. And in 1999, Lauryn Hill wins 5 Grammy Awards, the most ever by a woman, and she wasn't late in accepting the awards. Okay. All right, y'all, it's Wild Night Wednesday. Here to bring me some help of all the funny. We got K-Dub. How you doing?
I ain't K-Dub. I'm Kai Morgan. They put the name and rename me.
Don't ask me. That's what they wrote. I'm going to go ahead and read what the hell they wrote. We got Roz.
Hi, y'all. How y'all
we
doing?
We got Cletus.
What's going on, man?
It probably because nobody could recognize you since last time you were here. What the hell?
Ain't
you got a makeover?
Changed, Roland.
What hasn't changed?
The hair's still the same. How you doing?
Your hair's, oh, you had a hat on last time, though.
No.
No, because I don't remember the chia pet look. I don't recall that one.
That's more of a Roots remix.
I ain't remember the garage
But you stepped up your pocket square game.
Yeah, I got it.
I
bought one of yours,
is that
too.
One pre-made?
No.
Or did you actually, wow, look at her.
Oh,
show your skill.
Do it back.
Yeah, do it back.
Let's see. See a little magic to it. See right there, right there.
Woman, woman did it.
No, that's because I learned at KNG. The lady did it. I stayed in the store long enough, and I fixed it.
See, look at him. All right, then. All right, then.
But I like your line, though.
And I see you got the sweater vest. Henry Peterson will be very proud of you.
Well, Henry's my role model.
Because Henry is a sweater vest king. First of all, he only buys 3 a year.
It is.
He said he buys gray, black, and blue.
He should move into a gray. The sweater vest is a fat man's comfort zone. That's what it is. It keeps the man boobs lifted.
Yes.
It hides them well. It's our comfort zone.
Henry, do you agree with that?
Henry, first of all, Henry does. Henry always comes in here dressed like a funeral director. So,
it's a yearbook. That's a yearbook class. That's all it is. You know, he taking yearbook pictures out the window.
The sweater vest, I'm telling it's you, it works for the fat man. I'll take sexy from you, Rob.
It's quite sexy.
Rob, you think the sweater vest is sexy?
I am a awesome liar.
Yeah, that's good. Well, first of all, Roland, I don't like to iron my entire shirt. So with the sweater vest, I just have to do the sleeves.
So you do the sleeves.
Yeah, that's it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
You have dark skin nipples and you're trying to keep them compressed.
I don't like to talk about my nipples on air because my mama's watching.
She knows about
now,
it.
Now we move to his nipples.
Yeah, I don't know how we got. We're too wild. Hey, Roland, I did want to point out that we discussed this earlier about my Denver Broncos being Super Bowl champions. So I must have had to say that, especially
with question. Are you from Denver?
Born in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Fort Carson Army Base. That's why I'm a lifelong Bronco.
You know that little water.
I only drink Dasani.
That game was rigged.
I'm sorry. You only drink
Let him say it again. I want to hear it again. I'm like you. I want to hear it again.
But you can also call it Dasani. That's how you say it in the hood. Like it's two words.
Versus Dasani.
Yeah, black people name their children Dasani.
Okay, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. I got you, all right.
Yeah, sometimes you got to look off on that one.
Well, see, let me tell you what, we used to get it confused in our house because my mama bought Sunny Delight, and that's what she called it, Dasani. Bring me that Dasani. That's what she was talking about, the Sunny Delight. She said, bring the sun in here.
But if she said Dasani, I confuse it with the body wash or something. That just would confuse me.
No, see, when I was growing up, we didn't have body wash. You had either a big piece of soap or a little piece of soap. That's all you had in your life. You had dried up soap that had all the hair from the other family members on it. Or you had a new piece. That's all you had.
You needed a father. And I hear it all
first of all,
your
first
voice.
Of all,
I hear
first
that.
Of all, was a lie. Dad, soap. First of all, the search continues for my father. Anybody can jump
that
in.
Same soap.
See, on TV, you can reach out to
Well, with the unemployment rate and where it is right now, and the fact that I'm grown, he ain't gonna have to pay no child support or anything. Anybody can step in. For a long time.
That back child support,
well, he's just stepping in. Joe Clark was my dad for a long time. Anything I did, anything wrong, my mama made me go watch Lean On Me. True story. True story.
Didn't work.
My life is an open book. I smoke crack, don't I? No.
Man.
That was all taken in by Elder Barge. You didn't have a problem. He just smoked crack.
When we come back, I gotta get our comedian's take out. A real Ben Carson questioning the blackness.
Uncle Ben!
Come on now.
Of President Obama. Back on News 1 out a moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, welcome back, News 1 Now. We've got K-Dub, or somebody actually put
They done renamed it again. It's a Kyle now.
Okay, hold on. So somebody put Kyle Morgan in the...
I swear.
Is that your name?
No, it's Kai.
Okay.
So we don't even know what he don't have a lower third.
Folks get mad at me. They're like, Roland, you shouldn't call us out. And I'm just going to read what you write. Okay, we got Roz. Roz, how you doing? And we got Dasani.
Dasani.
So I got to get y'all to tell you real quick on Ben Carson.
Uncle Ben. That's my uncle, Uncle Ben.
I ain't about to call that man mom.
Uncle Ben. First of all, he's a brilliant brain surgeon. He don't have his own brain, but he's a brilliant brain surgeon. And I agree with him. You have to say that Obama didn't grow up in the blackest of situations. Because if he did, he would have had at least one uncle that would have came out and ruined his attempt for presidency. We all have at least one. How many times you seen him have a cookout at the White House? Zero. He ain't had near a cookout. Didn't grow up black. He didn't.
Well, he got his mother-in-law cooking greens all in the
White House. His mother-in-law ain't make no greens. She made green bean casserole because that's a white staple.
Other president had their mother-in-law stand at the White House? That is nothing but black. That's black.
That white as butter.
What Ben want? Ben want him to have Rockwilders and pit bulls running around.
You supposed
house.
To.
You ain't supposed to have that.
You supposed
it's the
to.
White House.
If you gonna
actually,
be.
Actually, they use German Shepherds.
He done had.
Exactly.
look at all the black
hold on. Obviously, you haven't been to the White House.
I done been to the White House.
No, you've
been by the White House.
You've been by the White House?
I rolled by.
Oh, now. You rolled by.
I got a lot of Negro stuff.
The way my criminal set up right now, I ain't been in it. But once that thing stuff is dry.
Well, we don't even know your real name. We can't get your name. You can't get in the White House.
Why?
Well, they got you right now.
K-Dub is not invited
right
to the White House.
K-Dub to the White House. But he's letting everybody else in. He done had Kendrick Lamar, all kinds of rappers. And
Jay-Z. He let Jay-Z right and Beyonce go to the Situation Room.
Yeah.
Well, they are situated. The Illuminati rules everything. So whenever they make a call, they make a call.
But that right there make them black.
The
fact that people he done let have come over to the White House. The fact that he played ball at the White House.
Obama. Smoked Newports.
No, he is black enough. You are using your verb. You're using your verb. You're using your verb wrong. He did not smoke. He still smokes Newports. You can't tell me that man ain't a pack a day.
Excuse me, he just quit. You ain't gonna disrespect my president.
Since he been in office, he went from looking 30.
He just started back up.
He looked 30 when he went into office. He looked 30 when he went off. He's gonna come out looking 89. He looked like Bernie Sanders right now. He was young and spry when he went in there. That White House.
It ain't like Bernie. We don't even need him in office.
Last hey, Bernie, feel the burn!
Bernie on the weekend died.
Penicillin shots. Penicillin shots for America.
Obama is black enough. If you got 1 ounce of black in you, you're a black man. You're a black woman.
If you married to a Michelle with bangs, you black. So he black.
If your woman don't got edges, you black.
No, it's some Asians that ain't got it. They're going to continue this while we're gone. I'll be back. News 1 now tomorrow.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 now with Roland Martin.